The jihadi group Boko Haram are fighting to establish an Islamic caliphate. Since 2009 alone, their insurgency has killed 15,000 people and left 1.5 million more homeless. From their base in northern Nigeria, they've attacked neighbouring Niger, Chad and Cameroon. Suicide bombings have almost become a daily occurrence in Nigeria's northern villages and towns, and adjacent countries are increasingly finding themselves the targets of such attacks, causing widespread fear amongst much of the population. Authorities determined to keep their citizens safe are increasingly opting for more stringent or draconian ways of stopping would-be attackers. Boko Haram have also changed their tactics, now employing the use of more female suicide bombers, believing they can more easily slip below the radar of security forces. As a result, many regions have banned the use of the burqa, the full Islamic veil worn by some women, first in Cameroon, then Chad, and now Niger. Nigerian senator and human rights campaigner Shehu Sani told me that the neighbouring governments will struggle to convince people that these bans are temporary, bans which he believes are an infringement of civil liberties.
The bans have come as a result of the spread of insurgency from northeastern Nigeria to some of these neighbouring countries. And the concern is that such a law, such banning, could seriously infringe on the right of people to move around and also the right of people to wear what they want to wear as a fashion or as a religious dress. I see it as an infringement. The government need to do a lot in terms of trying to convince people that this is not going to be permanent and it's going to only serve a certain time. But I still see it as an infringement of the fundamental rights of people.
Senator Sani believes this could be a slippery slope to violating more of people's rights in the name of fighting terror in future.
Since the war against terror started for over a decade ago, even since terrorism spread to this part of Africa, the government has taken measures that clearly infringe on fundamental rights of people and violate their civil liberties. And this is one of them. And the danger of allowing this to go is that more is to come in terms of trespassing on people's fundamental rights. And the concern is that we cannot, as Africans, we cannot have our constitutional rights violated in the exigencies of fighting terror. Government must find a balance in such a way that they can protect their citizens at the same time protect their fundamental rights. So most countries in the sub-region, particularly in Chad, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger Republic, most have always been excusing civil liberties in the name of fighting terror. Terrorists must not dictate our ways of life. And if this trend continues, certainly dictatorship will have to be justified in the name of fighting terror.
In Chad, the new law has reportedly been welcomed by much of the population. But weeks after it was announced, many women were still defiantly wearing their burqas in public. Leading National Police spokesman Paul Manga to warn that anyone who does not obey the law will be automatically arrested and brought to justice, as security forces were ordered to go through the markets and burn all the burqas they could find. Abdel Karim Yacoub Kundigumi Egre, a Chadian political activist and NGO representative, thinks the ban is a small price to pay to ensure people's safety.
Citizens generally accept and respect this ban because wearing of the burqa is not part of our traditional dress. It is a new phenomenon. So for our security and for our life, citizens are ready to accept this decision. They do not have a choice because our lives are threatened and our nation's in danger. Those terrorists are using this dress to kill our parents, our friends, our citizens. When we are in war, we accept to lose some of our freedoms to make possible the security of our nation. I think that Chadian women are intelligent. Chadian women understand why the government decided to ban this dress. It's not against them. It's not against the tradition. It's not against their choice. It's not against something other than our security. We want to be safe. We want to see who is who. Now, in this moment, we need to identify each citizen or foreigners come to our country, our city, or our village to see his face and to know who is it. So I think that if women refuse this ban, I think that they are contribute to help other kind of attacks to come to us. If the terrorist attack, for example, the markets, the bus stations, They don't choose who they kill. They kill anyone, innocent people. So anyone can lose a relative there. So I think that Chinese women will understand deeply why, for moments, this ban is a necessity.
But Abdelkrim is still worried that the government may use people's fears of Boko Haram to accumulate more powers over its citizens. In a controversial anti-terrorism bill passed unanimously by Parliament, Chad is reintroducing the death penalty barely 6 months after its abolition.
The Parliament adopted a draft law anti-terrorist. I am very afraid about this. Human rights organizations and non-governmental organizations must be very, very vigilant to not let the government do what he wants. Why Boko Haram or other terrorist groups can come to our country and attack us? Because we have not a very good government. We have not very good democracy there. We have not freedom there. People are economically and socially in very, very bad situation. So everyone are angry about this. So what the terrorists do? They speak to our youth. They tell them, come to with us and we can fight the corruption. We can do a very good governance. So the young people who have no future in our country follow these terrorists. If you see, for example, Nigeria, why Boko Haram is possibly north of Nigeria? Because this area is very poor, despite the riches of Nigeria. If you see militants of Boko Haram, you can't find many Chadian youth. Why those Chadian youth are going to those terrorists? They follow those crazy guy because they see that in our country, we have a dictature. One person stay like 25 years on the power. Just his family are keeping all our money and our economic system. So just few people benefits all our riches, and the majority are in the poverty. The corruption is endemic in Chad. Everything you have to pay. So how can you fight this phenomenon if the social situation and economic situation in our country is so bad?
Hilary Matthes, a researcher with the Nigeria Social Violence Project at Johns Hopkins University, thinks this ban may be playing into the extremists' hands.
The veil ban makes perhaps more moderate Muslims feel as if they're being persecuted by their government. It's a restriction on the practice of their faith, and it incorrectly confuses extremists and terrorists with simply observant Muslims, and marginalizing or alienating any segment of your population is a recipe for disaster, but particularly given the fact that Boko Haram is attempting to spread throughout that region, increasing the grievances or frustrations of local Muslim populations is ultimately counterproductive. It will depend on how strictly it's being enforced. But given the proportion of the population that does wear at least some version of the veil, it would be very difficult to ban outright.
And it's not just the burqa being outlawed. After two suicide bombers were pretending to beg in a market, Chad has outlawed begging in public. And in Niger, a ban on motorbikes has been extended for being the so-called method of transport of choice for terrorists.
Really cracking down on motorbikes is going to frustrate a young, largely male population that oftentimes uses those motorbikes as not only a form of transportation, but also a way of generating income by running taxi services. So I think you're perhaps throwing the baby out with the bathwater in cracking down on Muslim populations, young male populations, and urban populations in general. You're really frustrating a large swath of your population.
Hilary believes this adversarial stance may be pushing already marginalized peoples further away.
Time and time again, we've seen that groups like Boko Haram and other extremist religious groups thrive in atmospheres where people feel divorced from their state, they feel persecuted by their state, and in which there's not a lot of opportunities to advocate for governmental reform or economic inclusion into the state's activities. So if governments in the region want to be serious about countering the message of Boko Haram, they need to engage with their populations rather than taking an adversarial stance. And that has to do not only with political integration, but also socioeconomic development of marginalized groups.
With the support of much of the region's population, these temporary bans look set to continue for the time being. But as the multinational force pushes Boko Haram into retreat, the group has vowed to continue terrorizing people with these hard-to-stop attacks against civilians.